So this actually is a psalm that probably most of you have heard. Well, I say that. I guess the older ones of you have heard, because this was like one of those psalms that's constantly repeated years and years ago. I suppose it doesn't happen so much now. But let me read it to you, and then we'll just try and get into it and see what we can pull together. It's from Psalm 23, and it's a psalm of a guy called David. It says this: "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures, and he leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And even though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil, for you are with me, and your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." I suppose most people only hear some of those words when they go to funerals, yeah? You know, you get that, I will fear no evil, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Well, I just want to try and explain something that's going on. And it's written, as I said, by a guy called David, who was a king. But he was a king who rose from nothing. He was the youngest in his family. He was overlooked. But when he became older, he actually became the king of Israel. So a big sort of mega story, really. But he, in his younger days, had been a shepherd. And I suppose we all do it, don't we? When we try to find some way to communicate, we draw on our own experience. It's natural. We draw on the things that made a big impact on us. And this was a huge deal for him. I suppose there's a little bit this morning, everything you've ever wanted to know about shepherds, but were afraid to ask. Right, so there's going to be a little bit of sort of looking at the role of a shepherd. And the amazing thing is, I guess, is that it's a job that started at the dawn of time, however long ago that was, but only really stopped being a job as we know it in the same way probably only about 100 years ago. So for thousands of years, the job didn't change. For thousands of years, people did exactly the same thing. So, just thinking about what the shepherds were and why you had shepherds. And shepherds had a very bad rep. In fact, if you had to think of somebody to blame for what's going wrong around you, you would pick on shepherds. Shepherds were actually the most disreputable people you could get. Now, a family used to have, you know, sheep and goats. But what would happen is that the land around the village wouldn't support it. So as more land was given over to farming, the pasture lands where these sheep had to graze became further and further away. And so what happened, each village would sort of hire a group of shepherds. And if you had 100 sheep, you might have 15 shepherds. And they would leave the village way behind, and they would go, you know, scores of miles away, and they would have to keep moving, because once you get a whole herd of sheep on a grass field, they'll go through it pretty quickly, and then you have to move on. So they would just be constantly traveling, constantly taking these sheep around. And in the Holy Land where this is written, they would get up about 4 a.m. and then they would work, graze till about 10 a.m. when the sun's high, and then the shepherd would lead them into the coolest place they could find, and that's where they would lie down and digest the grass that they'd eaten. Now, a shepherd would carry a bag made of the skin of an animal, and he would carry food. He'd probably have bread and dried fruit and olives. He'd have a sling as a weapon, because they didn't have sheepdogs. So he would, you know, he would throw with his sling, and he'd sort of pick off a sheep going in the wrong way and just sort of fire a shot across its bows until it stopped and turned around. He would have a short club, a staff, and it usually would have nails in it, because it was a weapon to, you know, fight off anything that was trying to attack the flock. And then he would have a staff and a crook, if you like, with a hook on the end, and he could pull sheep buck that had gone astray. And then at night, they would go and try and find a sheepfold, and this would be essentially a sort of like a dry stone wall in a circle. Hello, Bonnie lad. You all right? How are you doing? You made a good job of it. Now imagine these dry stone walls in a circle. And what would happen is one shepherd would lie across the front opening, and there would be what they call the door. So what would happen is that no animals could get out because he was blocking the door. And on the top of the dry stone walls all the way around, they would put pebbles. And then if any animal tried to get in during the night and jump over the wall, it would knock the pebbles off, wake the shepherds up, and they'd fight off the beastie or whatever it was, a wolf. They had wolves. And so that was the life of a shepherd. But of course, the missing sheep would have to be accounted for, because they belonged not to the shepherds, but belonged to the people who commissioned them. And in remote areas, you know, it must have been really tough, because what happens is you've got this herd of sheep, say 100 of them, and you bring them into the stone enclosure, and the shepherd would get his rod, and he would put his rod just off the floor, and every sheep would have to jump to get in the enclosure. And they would do that as a way of checking whether the sheep were healthy, because if you've done your leg, you kind of jump over the thing, you know. And so the sheep would go over the rod, jump over the rod and go in. And of course, if any of them were ill, or if any of them were sick or had been bitten or anything else, they would use oil and pour on the oil, and sometimes wine, and pour in the oil and the wine as a sort of way of treating anything that was, any sheep that was damaged. But the trouble is that the Jewish faith was all about being clean, and the shepherds were the scruffiest bunch of people you could ever imagine. Because they were out, as I say, for scores of miles, nothing to wash. They were touching dead bodies, and then the Jewish, the sheep, not each other, not dead shepherds, just dead sheep. But in the Jewish faith, if you touched a dead body, you were ritually unclean. You've got to remember that, at the time of Jesus, the Jewish faith, what the New Testament's about, is set there. And because of that, they weren't allowed to go into the temple. They were really slagged off by the religious people. And at the time of Jesus, shepherds stood at the sort of bottom rung of the ladder. They were even worse than the tax collectors who joined the Romans to pull in the taxes from the people. They were really despised. One of the rabbis at the time of Jesus actually wrote down and said this: nobody should feel obligated to rescue a shepherd who'd fallen into a pit. Imagine. By law, they had to get a sheep out of a pit if it fell in, but the shepherd you could just ignore, because they were the lowest of the law. They were had no civil rights at all. They couldn't act as a witness in a court case because nobody believed a shepherd would tell the truth, right? And if you tried to buy wool or milk or meat from a shepherd, you were breaking the law, because it was always assumed that the shepherd had nicked it, right? So, you can't get worse in society than that. And yet, the amazing thing to my mind, and I suppose it's slightly off the subject, but can you remember at the time of Jesus, at his birth, and we're remembering kids this morning, but at the birth of Jesus, who is it that God tells first about the fact the Messiah has come? It's the lowest of the low. And in Jesus' life, he constantly went with people who were apparently beyond the pale. Jesus was, you know, they were attacked him, the religious leaders, said he's the friend of sinners. And by that they meant not people who were doing things wrong, but the underclass, the people that everybody despised. They were the people that Jesus was always associated with. So let's just turn to this psalm and just go through a couple of words at a time and just have a think about the way that shepherds work and what this might mean to us. So it starts off and says, the Lord, and then the Lord is. The Lord. I don't know whether you believe in God, but I had a fascinating discussion with a guy a short while ago who was absolutely certain that God didn't exist. And he said, do you as a Christian ever have doubts? And I said, well, of course I do. Everybody has doubts. And then I turned it on him and said, do you have doubts? And he stopped. Because this guy was, you know, pretty certain that there wasn't such a thing as God. But really, he had to admit too that he was in a place where every now and again he wondered. I wonder where you are this morning. It's one of those questions that people tend to ignore because we get so busy with life. But it's a serious question. Where do you stand on this? Do you believe there is a God? Or do you believe there is nothing? Big question. Probably one of the most important questions you can ever be asked. It's a question that you don't really want to think about. Because the trouble is, if there is nothing, if there is no God, then what do we make of things like love and beauty? What do we make of things like that? Because ultimately, if there isn't a God, they're just accidents. You know, we might stand and see the awesome thunderstorms and or a brilliant sunset. And I think something speaks to us. I think something sort of shouts out to us inside. Now, if you believe in God, you see the complexity of life and complexity on the planet. But you see the handiwork of God behind it. But if you don't, everything is just an accident. And if everything's an accident, then there can be no real meaning in life. The psalm says, the Lord is. It's interesting, when Jesus talked about the name of God, that most sacred name of God, he said this way, he said, God is called I Am. In other words, God is this, we lose the words to describe God, but he stands outside time. He isn't part of time. And because of that, he knows the end from the beginning. And for me, and I guess for the guy who wrote this, King David, there's an incredible comfort in knowing God can never be taken by surprise. He knows the end from the beginning because he stands outside time. And if that's the case, there's nobody better that you can trust in. There's no shocks and surprises for God. And he says, the Lord is my shepherd. I'm going to suggest that for Christians, that's exactly a great picture of what it's like to be a Christian. To be a Christian, actually, it's easier to get your head around than a lot of other pictures. The Lord is my shepherd. But I'm going to suggest, whether the Lord's your shepherd or not, you do have a shepherd in your life. What I mean by that is, everybody is following something. You can't follow nothing. Now, okay, for some kids, they wake up on a morning and the only thing they want to be is on X Factor or The Voice or whatever. Even though they know the program's naff. Even though the program, you know, everybody slags the program off. But inside, they're wanting to follow this great shepherd in their life that's called fame and celebrity. And it's powerful. You know, you see these kids on the TV shows, you know, and they'll say, I've got to get through. There's nothing else I want in my life. In all my life, I've yearned for this moment. And the 15-year-old. We all follow on something. And for some people, it's other things. For some people, it's I won't say money because money is just a means to an end, but you know what I mean. For some people, you know, if you buy a new car, have you ever bought a new car, by the way? Waggle your hand at us if you've ever bought a new car. Isn't it a pretty cool feeling when you get in it? You know, and you've got that smell. And it doesn't come from one of those things you hang on the mirror. It's the real deal smell of a new car. You know. And you get in, and suddenly you look around the rest of the street, and it's daft, I know. But inside, something says, look at me. I'm pretty cool. I've got a new car. And some people are so caught by that feeling, they constantly want to reinterpret that every day. They want that every day. But, you know, sometimes that feeling's gone, so you've got to get the right watch. Because when you're standing in the bank and handing over something, they see that it's a Rolex. Or something better. Do you know what I mean? A lot of people in life just seem to follow the shepherd of other people being impressed. For some people, it's about making enough money so their family is taken care of. And I understand that, because you guys want to look after the band, don't you? But for some people, it gets out of control. And, you know, how many people here know a workaholic who technically is working for the family, but they spend so much time at work, the family is suffering? Do you know anybody like that? We're all following something. I was looking up, you know, Bob Dylan became a Christian a while back. And I don't know where he is now, whether he's still a Christian or not. But he wrote a song, "You'll Be Relieved to Know." I'm not going to sing it to you. You might be a rock and roll addict, prancing on the stage. You might have drugs at your command, a woman in a cage. You might be a businessman with some high degree thief. They might call you a doctor, or they might call you chief, but you're going to have to serve somebody. Yes, you are. You're going to have to serve somebody. You might be a state trooper. You might be a young Turk. You might be the head of some TV network. You might be rich. You might be poor. You might be blind or lame. You might be living in another country in another name. But you're going to have to serve somebody. You know, the reality is we're all serving. We're all walking a life. Because something gets you up in the morning. Something makes you get up. And it might just be need, but everybody is dancing to a tune. For some people we know, and some people in this fellowship that they've been caught up in drugs, serious drugs, and had a terrible life. Some people have been caught up in crime and done time. Hey, that rhymed. Remind me of that. I'll write it down afterwards. I could write a song, couldn't I? Be the new Dylan. But you get what I'm saying. Everybody is caught up in a reason in the life. They might want to admit it. It might be a bottle of whiskey or whatever, but everybody is following something. It might be a bingo game, or it might be running, it might be anything. But the Lord is my shepherd. That's mine. That's who I'm following. And the reason is because if he does exist and he stands out of time, and the incredible great news in the Bible is that he loves me. If that's what it's about, I want to be following him. Because there's bad shepherds out there. There's bad shepherds, and of course the trouble is that those dreams that you follow, those bad shepherds you follow, don't care for you. How many people do you know have worked hard in an organization, really for years and years and years, and then the day comes and they get their is it 60 or 45? The redundancy one, P45. You know, they've worked all their life and they get this little piece of paper and it says, "We don't care, you're gone." My shepherd isn't like that. Because all of this psalm is about how he cares for me. I shall not want. The Lord's my shepherd. I'll not want. You know, the Lord's Prayer that Jesus taught said, give us this day our daily bread. And he said, if you have need, you bring it to God. He says, he cares for you. If he cares for the birds of the air, how much more is he actually care for you? I can turn around and say, I shall not be in want. That's where it says. It's not that I won't want if things, if you like, but where it says that I will not have any needs unmet by God. He is looking after me. He's the guy that's responsible now for my life. It's not me. I'm not the sheep sort of wandering off, because he is now caring for me. Where do I want to be? Do I want to be standing, you know, 5 miles away from the sheepfold? Or do I want to be inside, knowing that my shepherd's lying across the door to protect me from whatever's out there? It says he makes me lie down in green pastures. The shepherd's job is to lead me, and he leads me not in the desert, and he doesn't lead me onto the, you know, the farm fields. My shepherd will lead me into green pastures. He'll find for me the place that I need to be. He leads me beside the still waters. It says, you know, that the shepherds recognize that sheep hate running water. And so what they would do, they'd go down beside the river, and the shepherd would dam the river, and they'd make a little pool at the side so the sheep could come down and drink from the still waters. That's what he does for me. He knows what I need. He's pledged to care for me. He restores my soul. He doesn't just care for my body, but he cares for my spirit too. You know that ideal holiday that you've always wanted? You know, the one you dream about? You know, the Christmas is over and the TV adverts start. And the first adverts you get on Boxing Day is either for the sales or for holidays. Yeah? And you know those Caribbean-ish type ones? You know, where you've got utterly white sands and blue seas. And something inside of you goes, oh yeah, I want to be there. And you might ask yourself, why do I want to be there? But it's something about a need to be refreshed inside. And that's the place that would do it. I need to find rest inside. The incredible thing is, the Christians believe that we can feel that refreshing actually from our relationship with him. Because you know what it's like when you get on a holiday beach, don't you? Friends of ours were off to somewhere posh. I don't know how they do it, but hey, they're off to somewhere posh. And they get there, and the whole family's there, and they've paid for the whole family to go. And Diane, our friend, was saying, within half an hour of arriving, they were arguing about money, arguing about which bar to go to. And within 2 hours, the whole family decided not to see each other for the whole of the holiday. The dream of refreshing our souls out there, but the reality is that we can find it in Christ. He leads me in the paths of righteousness. Oh, that sounds very spiritual, doesn't it? Actually, it just means he leads me in the right paths. He leads me right. If the Lord's your shepherd, actually I can trust my future to him. Why? He's going to lead me right. It's not going to lead me wrong. We can have a confidence. Why? For his namesake. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his namesake. Why? We call him Father. It's all about our relationship with him. Sienna trusts you. That trust might be, at this point in time, she mightn't be able to explain it to herself. But when you are there, she knows it. And when you are there, she feels content. And when Sharma then holds the bairn in her arms, it's the place where we define our relationship. God is our heavenly Father. Now listen, because these are important bit. This is the crunch bit, right? So this is the bit that you just try and keep a wee bit awake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, he is with me. He You see, the sad truth of things is that one day we're all going to find ourselves walking in the valley of the shadow of death. And every word in this seems to scream meaning. I get this image, first of all, of walking. Now, when I'm scared, I tend to run. It's not a pretty sight. A bag of spuds on legs. But I love the idea that in this most incredibly dangerous, serious place, that we will just be walking. Why? Because we won't be walking alone. I want you to notice that we're walking in the valley. But it's the valley of the shadow of death. We don't walk in the valley of death. We walk in the valley of the shadow. So in other words, where we are on this path that we walk through, first of all, we are walking through it. There is something at the other side. And as we walk through it, we only walk through the shadow. Now, to get a shadow, there has to be two things. There has to be an object, and there has to be light. I want you to know that even though we might pass death, if we're able to say the words, "The Lord is my shepherd," we will be walking a pathway where death might be right close to us. But the light of God is there. And although death might cast a shadow, we walk through it. Let me tell you something. You needn't be scared of shadows. The shadow of a dog cannot bite. The shadow of a gun cannot kill. And the shadow of death cannot destroy us. No wonder the guy goes on to say, David says, "I will fear no evil." Doesn't that just make sense? We one day will pass from where we are now to another place. But we will pass it with our shepherd. And we will pass it walking with him. And we'll get to the other side. "I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." Yeah, of course. We jump over the rod, if you like. And on those occasions, you know, when God tests us to see whether we're healthy. And we jump over the rod to get into the enclosure. Yeah. I know that if I go off the path, his crook with a hook on the end is going to just come out and pull me back to where I should be. Yeah. Isn't that a comfort to know that my life resides in his hands? "You prepare a table before me." In other words, everything that I need for the future. You can trust God. You can trust God to provide. In the presence of mine enemies, the wolves might be in the hills watching. The bad shepherds might stand and stare. But I'm under the protection and the care of God. "You anoint my head with oil." Yeah, he anoints us. "My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. And I'll dwell in the house of the Lord forever." I'm just going to say one simple thing as we close, and I'll read the psalm again. Jesus described himself as the good shepherd who gives his life for the sheep. He said he's the good shepherd that gives his life for the sheep. And guess what? He did it. He did just that. He gave his life. He willingly died upon a cross. And he willingly did it for one simple reason. You got to get this. This is it. This is the heart of everything. When Jesus died upon the cross, he was dying on the cross for everything that you've ever done wrong. This is the guy that doesn't hang around with the posh kids. This is the guy that doesn't hang around with the religious leaders. This Jesus hangs around with the outcasts of society. He said, I didn't come for the well, I came for those who weren't well. What do you feel like inside? Because he said this, the sheep know my voice. You see, being lost, and he said, and he gave a great parable, a great story where it says, you know, 99 sheep are left behind in the sheepfold, but the good shepherd is the one that goes off in the middle of the night to find the lost sheep. Friends, let me say this quite simply. You can be lost before you know it. Anybody been lost? My youngest son, we were near Aysgarth Falls, and there's a little bit of a foresty wood thing, and the waterfall is incredibly powerful and strong. And we walk, and we walk one side of a tree, look behind us, and he wasn't there. And he was young at the time. There was nothing more utterly terrifying for me at that point than knowing he wasn't there. Ran back along the path, couldn't find him. When every possible other diversion, and every time I kept coming back and looking at that waterfall, and you can guess, I only had one thing in my mind, and it scared me silly. What if he'd slipped in? When we found him about an hour later, I needed Valium and, you know. But he couldn't even tell us the point at which he got lost. Because he was just walking and suddenly the realization hit him. And for some people, life's like that. You're lost. And there comes a horrible moment when you suddenly realize inside that, yeah, you know, you might have had a bad shepherd. You might have had a wrong motive in life, but suddenly you stop and you realize, oh, there's only the one word can describe it. I'm lost. I'll tell you, Jesus came for the lost. You might think you can find your own way home, but the one thing that's proven over and over again is when you think you're lost or know you're lost, you really can't find your own way back because you don't know where you're starting from. Everybody who's lost needs to be rescued. Jesus said, my sheep know my voice. I'm going to ask a simple question this morning. I hope you don't mind. I was going to say, I hope you don't mind me being churchy. But there again, you're in a church. What do you expect? I'm going to ask a simple question. Does this make sense to you? Inside, do you hear a voice? I don't mean like, you know, through the ear, but is this speaking to you? Because if you are lost, or if you've been following a bad shepherd, you have got an incredible moment coming up because you can decide to accept Christ in your life. And you'd be able to say the words of this psalm along with us as we read it. And it would make total sense to you. It's a simple question. The sheep know his voice. Do you feel it inside? Is Christ speaking to you? Going to have to serve somebody. Your choice. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. And he restores my soul. He leads me in the paths righteousness for his name's sake. And even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies, and you anoint my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.